Well, good morning, family.
Good to see all of you here this morning. We want to welcome our visitors as well. If you have not filled out a card that's on the back of the chair in front of you or close to the back of the chair in front of you, we want to encourage you to get that filled out. Give it to any of the men that you see standing up here this morning in the service so we can have a record of your attendance. So a couple of things that we need to work through before we get into the lesson on the announcement front. This past week, I think that probably most of us said these five words at least once to someone that we knew or loved. Thank you for your service. We say it all the time, don't we? And it's really five simple words that acknowledge someone who's worn the uniform of one of the armed forces in the United States of America. And that appreciation is heard all the time. But on Veterans Day, our nation and us, we truly honor the men and women who served our country. And so to those of you who took the oath and have served our nation, both past and present, we want to say those five simple words to you one more time. Thank you for your service. This week, Tuesday, 9 o'clock, we have the food pantry. If you're interested in coming down and helping, I know that they will not turn you away on that. And if you know someone who is of need, let them know about the food pantry that's coming up this Tuesday at 9 o'clock as well. Austin has asked me to tell the young adults that this Friday at 6:30 here at the building will be this year's Friendsgiving. Apparently the turkey has been, where'd Austin go? Turkey has been taken care of. It's everything else that needs to be provided. If you have questions, talk to Austin about it and he'll get you that information. That's for our young adults. I want to remind everyone also that this Thursday, since today is our last life group of the year, we'll go ahead and meet at our house at 7 o'clock on Thursday for singing. We're going to take a break through the rest of November and December because of the holidays, but if you're wanting to come by the house at 7 o'clock, we're just going to sing some songs for an hour at the house. Knowing that today is the last life group of the year, I want to pause for a second and tell you guys thank you. For all of the support, everything, the encouragement that comes from being in a life group, it's so encouraging and such a blessing, I know, to me and Sonny, to get to know each of you better and to just learn from you during those time periods. I pray that each of us that has been participating in the life groups has received a tremendous blessing and encouragement from getting to know your brothers and sisters better through all of that. Keep your eye out. We'll put another sign-up sheet out for next year's life group, Lord willing. So we can continue this practice. But starting next Sunday is going to begin our winter nights. And those of you that have been coming, you know that on winter nights, it's just that time when we're not doing life group. Well, the elders have decided that this time around, to continue the trend of getting to know each other and the fellowship that is there, we're going to meet in the fellowship hall on Sunday evenings at 6 o'clock for our winter nights program. There'll be a short devotional at the beginning. Austin LaRock has it next week. He'll be presenting the short devotional for us. And then we're going to just spend our time in fellowship. Bring your favorite game. Bring some finger food. Plan on spending time together in the fellowship hall, getting to know each other a little bit better. And that'll start next Sunday at 6 p.m. On November 22nd, Maplewood will be hosting their annual Thanksgiving service. They are asking for those that are in attendance to bring a dessert. Everything else is covered, but if you're planning on attending the Thanksgiving service at Maplewood on the 22nd, to have a dessert to share that you come, when you come. And then also, we want to encourage everybody to stop by the back table. Check the sign-up sheets that are back there. There's more coming. There's only two right now. One is for the Christmas party and the gumbo sign-up sheets. But the other is the transportation needs. And I talked with Bobby this morning, and I said, how's that coming? He said, well, we got a few people that have signed up. It'd be nice to see more that are on there. So I want to encourage you. This is not for the bus driver. This is for you providing personal rides in your own vehicle to folks that can't make it to either Bible class or worship, and then arranging for them to get home afterwards. So if you're interested and you've been praying about that, looking for some way you can serve, put your name on the sheet, talk to Bobby, get more information about all of that so that he can get you planned in on everything. Let's go ahead and open up our Bibles to Galatians chapter 4. It's where we're going to spend our time this morning. And some of you have probably wondered why we have Chinese finger traps and a can of rope up here. We'll get to that here in a minute. But because I'm going to need some help this morning in teaching the lesson that Paul's presenting to us. But what we've been talking about through this has been some pretty serious stuff. Whenever we read the book of Galatians and we start seeing the challenges and the problems that the churches in that region were having, this is serious and we need to take it seriously and stop and pay attention to everything that Paul has been talking about. Because what we talked about last week is the biggest, what has led to all of the problems, that there are Christians in this region who have chosen to reject their inheritance, preferring a life of slavery over a life of sonship. They've given control of their inheritance to what Paul called these no gods. Letting God be God, as Stephen said this morning, wasn't good enough for them. They would turn that inheritance over to gods that aren't gods, and that thinking that what the true God did is insufficient for their salvation, and so things have to be added. And when you put it that way, it really does become a big deal, doesn't it? To sell off what God has given you as if it's unimportant, that's a big deal. And when we hear of people doing that, or we see people doing that, we need to consider it as such a big deal that we cannot be silent. We have to say something to them to open their eyes to what the truth is. And really, let's just be upfront on this, okay? When these Judaizing teachers came into town, I highly doubt that they made a big deal about what they were teaching and what they were doing. That they more than likely presented adherence to the law as something it's really not that big a deal. It's kind of like, do we do chairs or pews? It's not that big a deal. What really matters is that you're sitting comfortably, right? And not presenting it in that way. But when you look in or look back to Galatians chapter 2, and you see how Paul is describing them, and he says, because of the false brethren secretly brought in, who had sneaked in to spy out our liberty, they have to be snuck in. They have to be brought in secretly, because if they were brought in with fanfare, it really would become a big deal and people would understand what was going on. And I'm pretty sure that the teachings that they withheld or that they misrepresented were brought to them in that way. Hey, this isn't that big of a deal. Listen, I know that he said that this is a fact over here, but have you considered that there's alternative facts? That there are things that you probably haven't considered through the course of your life of trying to be pleasing to God and all of this? And this points to a mentality, guys, that there are varying truths out there. How many of us have heard someone say, well, that's my truth and that's your truth? How many of us know that to be false? I mean, honestly, know it, it's false. Now, just because a person believes that this is truth doesn't make it truth. It has to be verified. It has to be sought through and looked at. And does it apply across the board, consistently through everything? That it doesn't always depend on your point of view. Truth doesn't depend on your point of view, because truth is. Okay? And I'm not going to beat that horse too much today, but understand that this is a basic attack on truth. On the reality of the life that God is calling us to have. And so much, especially in Jewish theology, was based on the fact that they were the offspring of Abraham. Now, specifically the offspring of Abraham and Sarah, right? That was a big deal to them. And that's why circumcision is a big deal to the Jews. It was the sign of the covenant that God had made with Abraham, right? Abraham believes, it's reckoned to him as righteous. They split those animals in half. The floating pot, fire pot, goes through the middle, and then Abraham's told to be circumcised and to make this a perpetual thing that they did moving forward. When you look at verses like Genesis chapter 17, for instance, starting in verse 9, it says, God said further to Abraham, now as for you, you shall keep my covenant, you and your descendants after you throughout their generations. This is my covenant which you shall keep between me and you, and your descendants after you. Every male among you, excuse me, shall be circumcised. And you shall be circumcised in the flesh of your foreskin, and that shall be a sign of the covenant between me and you. And every male among you who is 8 days old shall be circumcised throughout your generations. A servant who is born in the house or who is bought with money from any foreigner who is not of your descendants. A servant who is born in your house or who is bought with money surely shall be circumcised. Thus shall my covenant be in your flesh for an everlasting covenant. But an uncircumcised male who is not circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin, that person shall be cut off from his people. He has broken my covenant. You understand why this becomes such a big deal to him, right? The breaking off and not being a part of the covenant, they don't want that. No one would want that who was living during this time and operating under the promises of God. Only true descendants of Abraham were circumcised. And it's no big deal, right? Everybody's doing it. But there's a little something that seems to be left out of their instruction. Namely, Hagar and Ishmael. Right? We're all familiar with the story of Abraham and Sarah, right? But what about Hagar and Ishmael? Is he also not a son of Abraham? And so what happened through the course of the teachings that was being brought into the Galatian regions by these folks is that they would choose the more positive aspects of things and then completely just, no, we don't know anything about that Hagar and Ishmael thing. But why the selective memory? I mean, Ishmael was 13 by the time Genesis 17 rolls around. It's not like he's new on the scene and hadn't been around. But I think what we see happening here, and we're going to talk about this more a little bit later, but I think what we see happening here is the fact that these individuals who snuck in to spy them out, to try and steal their liberty and freedom, who was duping these people into giving up their inheritance, they don't want to think about the whole truth. They don't want to, and much less be grouped with, the idea of slavery. You guys remember Jesus in his conversation with the Jewish folks as he's working and living in this world. And then they say to Jesus in John chapter 8, they say, we're descendants of Abraham and we've never been enslaved to anyone. Is that true? No, it's not true. Had they been enslaved? I have to seem to recall this 70-year thing with Babylon. I seem to recall this whole 430-year thing in Egypt. They had been slaves before. The problem is, when they didn't like a certain aspect of their history, they chose to either forget it or try to erase it. And by doing that, they create problems for everyone. Now, Paul doesn't deny any of this history. But instead, what he does is he embraces the whole truth and the lesson that it teaches. Join with me. We're in Galatians chapter 4. We're going to start in verse 21. He says, tell me, you who want to be under law, do you not listen to the law? For it is written that Abraham had two sons, one by the bondwoman and one by the free woman. But the son by the bondwoman was born according to the flesh, and the son by the free woman through the promise. This is allegorically speaking, for these women are two covenants, one proceeding from Mount Sinai, bearing children who are to be slaves. She's Hagar. Now this Hagar is Mount Sinai in Arabia and corresponds to the present Jerusalem, for she is in slavery with her children. But the Jerusalem above is free. She is our mother. For it is written, rejoice, barren woman who does not bear. Break forth and shout, you who are not in labor. For more numerous are the children of the desolate than the one who has a husband. And you, brethren, like Isaac, are children of promise. But as at that time he who was born according to the flesh persecuted him who was born according to the Spirit, so it is now also. But what does the Scripture say? Cast out the bondwoman and her son, for the son of the bondwoman shall not be an heir with the son of the free woman. So then, brethren, we are not children of a bondswoman, but the free woman. It was for freedom that Christ set us free. Therefore, keep standing firm, and do not be subject again to a yoke of slavery. Behold, I, Paul, say to you that if you receive circumcision, Christ will be of no benefit to you. And I testify again to every man who receives circumcision that he is under obligation to keep the whole law. You have been severed from Christ. You are seeking to be justified by law. You have fallen from grace. For we, through the Spirit, by faith, are waiting for the hope of righteousness. For in Christ Jesus, neither circumcision nor uncircumcision means anything, but faith working through love. There is a specific history lesson that is being taught here, and it's that of justification. And justification really literally means being made right in the eyes of God. Now, we can think of it this way, okay? There's two paths. And on these, there's two paths of justification that are actually being presented to the churches in the Galatian region, but also as Paul is talking about it here. If you're going to embrace the law and you're going to use that as your means to justification, you can do that. But that is dependent upon you keeping the rules all the way through. Now, understand, that doesn't mean you're justified in God's eyes. But you are definitely justified in your own eyes. The other path is justification through God's grace. And since he sets the standard, he's the one who justifies, and it's by our faith that is then credited to us as righteousness that we become heirs and co-heirs with Christ, which is all the stuff that we've talked about, leads us to that state of justification. These two paths, guys, are parallel and never meet. To be justified by the law and God's grace, Paul tells us, is impossible. To believe in justification through the law leaves no room for Jesus and what he has accomplished for us. And what is being presented as a small matter, circumcision, okay, creates all sorts of problems for the Galatian Christians, right? Because what was easy and what they were able to accomplish before is now impossible to accomplish. Let's tell you what. Here's what we're going to do. I'm going to ask for some young kids to come up here. They have to be able to tie a knot. Okay? If you can tie a knot and you're a young child, come on up here. We're going to show everyone, all the adults, what Paul is actually talking about. And when I say young child, I don't mean teenager. All right, we got Fallon. Come on. Who else is coming? You just need to be able to tie a knot. Come on. You're going to face them. I'm going to step down. No, you're going to face them up here. I'm going to step down. Come on. All right, line up. Line up. How many we got? I have 12 finger traps. Now, you can all tie a knot, right? Are you sure? I'm talking like sheep's bend. No, I don't care what the knot is. All right, I'm going to give you a piece of rope. And I want you to prove that you can tie a knot. Whenever I give it to you, go ahead and start tying. Tie a knot. I want us to pay close attention to these kids now, okay? Luke, you're done? That was easy. You did two? What are you, an overachiever? All right, everybody tie a knot. You sure you can do this? Okay, everybody got to tie a knot, right? You keep tying knots. All right, perfect. Everybody's got a knot. So here's the deal. You guys know what a Chinese finger trap is, right? All right, so what you're going to do is I'm going to give you a Chinese finger trap, and you need to don't do nothing until I tell you to, but I want you to put your index fingers, that's this one, often referred to in other ways, but we're going to call it the index finger, okay? I want you to put your index finger, in the Chinese finger trap on both hands. Go ahead. Both hands. What? Chinese finger trap, they're not that big a deal, right? Both hands. Now you have to keep your finger in the trap, tie a knot again. Fallon. Fallon, the overachiever. Why is it taking you guys so long? It took you no time to tie that knot before. What? The finger trap is giving you trouble, but it's not that big a deal. All right, Fallon, you're so smart. Put it on your middle finger now, too. All right. You got it? Come on, Polly, come on. How many of us are a little frustrated watching these kids try and tie a knot with finger traps on their fingers? Do we understand? All right, guys, go ahead and go back to your parents. Thank you, guys. Do we understand? Yep, you can keep the rope and the finger trap. Do we understand that that's the frustration that people are putting on those who have obeyed the gospel and experienced true freedom? It's not that big a deal, though, right? Just engage in the law. It won't hamper you at all. It won't keep you from being obedient and having faith at all. It won't be frustrating for you at all. But that's exactly what's happening to the churches in Galatia. That's what's happening to these Christians. They've been hamstrung by Chinese finger traps, thinking that they're going to get justified. And Paul's telling them, no, you can't be. Because, guys, it may not seem like a big deal, but they soon learn, and we're going to have to learn that accomplishing what God would have us do by faith in that faith in Him, or just tying a knot, is impossible. Because obligations to the small things places on us the burden of the whole. So what's being taught as a means to justification actually severs them from Christ. And I know that we've talked about this six ways till Sundays, but that's how important it is. That whenever we pursue righteousness, and I'm telling you right now, this morning, you need to take a very serious, hard look at yourself. If you are attempting to pursue righteousness without faith, then whatever means or method we are using causes us to fall from the path of grace. And we think back to our reading that Robin brought us from Romans chapter 9. What shall we say then? That Gentiles who did not pursue righteousness attained righteousness, even the righteousness which is by faith, but Israel, pursuing a law of righteousness, did not arrive at that law? Why? Did you notice what Paul said in the reading? Why didn't they attain righteousness? Because they did not pursue it by faith. But as though it were by works, they stumbled over the stumbling stone. Just as it is written, behold, I lay in Zion a stone of stumbling and a rock of offense, but he who believes in him will not be disappointed. Walking the path of this type of work mentality, or whatever means or method you are attempting to use to be justified, causes us to fall off the path of God's grace. And so many people believe that adhering to a set of behaviors will place an obligation on God toward us. Here's some examples for us that should help us to see whether or not we're stuck in the finger trap. You believe showing up for worship every Sunday makes you right with God. You read the Bible to substantiate your convictions, not to be shaped into the image of Jesus. You trust more in what you do than you trust in Jesus. when Paul says that it's not what we do that matters. What matters is whether or not we have faith in Jesus and what he accomplished for us. Because then what we do, that's just a natural outpouring of what Jesus has done. We don't have to focus on that. Behaviors can't produce faith. Only faith can produce behavior. And it's from our faith that we're justified by God's grace. And it's from that faith that we work. So I want to encourage you this morning. If you're stuck in the finger trap, cut it off. What you think might not be a big deal, but has actually led you down a path that is causing you to fall from this concept of faith and grace, is dangerous for you, eternally damning. And just as Paul is frustrated and is concerned for those Galatian Christians, we here are just as concerned for you. We want all to be made right in the eyes of God, but it's only God that can make us right in his eyes. That it's not what we do, but it's what's been done to us. We're going to stand and sing a song that Stephen selected for us as an encouragement and invitation for all, those of us who are stuck in the trap. Maybe, listen, you ain't going to be the first person stuck in a trap. But what takes real courage and conviction is to acknowledge that you're stuck in the trap and that you can't get yourself out of it. That God can do that for you through your confession, through your repentance, through your faith. He will lift you out of that sordid life of slavery and bring you back into the realm of a freedman, of a son, co-heir with Christ. We encourage you, if you're stuck, get unstuck. Let us pray for you. Let us help you. Let us encourage you. Let the elders know what's going on as they shepherd the flock. That we're here for you. Because each of us understands from a very personal perspective what it was like to be a slave, but what it's like to be free. If we can help you this morning, whether that's becoming a Christian through baptism, prayers, whatever it may be, we encourage you to make it known by coming forward while Stephen leads us in song.